Well, no, it's good.
Larry, can you kind of describe the differences between the industry now and when you started in it?
Yes, I could tell you that years ago, we had to work for everything we had to work. And it didn't come on the platter. It came very hard, everything. We organized first. We got into the industry. We felt a little better, but it was still a struggle. But later, it paid off. Time was different than now. We didn't have to, now the people don't have to work as hard as we were, because we made the union for them. We established for them everything. And they have it easier now than we have. Now they're different people entirely in the unions. As when we organized the union, we had Italian people, Polish people, German people, Jewish people, and they all came from the whole country to better themselves here. Italian people were oppressed. They were farmers a lot. They didn't make much. They ran away from their countries to this country. They learned here in trades. Most of them learned here. And they all worked. Children, husbands, wives, they all worked. Everybody worked. Jewish people came from Russia. They ran away from pogroms, from Siberia. They had jails. They couldn't live all over wherever they wanted. They couldn't learn. They couldn't go to schools wherever they wanted. And they lived very poor in Europe, account of that. And those that could afford to learn a little bit, later they had to go to, men had to go to the army. And they felt that they weren't too loyal to the Tsar, because the Tsar wasn't too good to them. So they ran away. And they became workers over here. It was easier to learn here a trade, because there was section work in the factories. We didn't have no schools to teach us. We came in, a girl came in, or a man came in, and the foreman told him what to do, and he did. And it was easier to become a tailor, or a shoemaker, or a printer, or whatever it is. A lot of Jewish boys became cigar makers. That was an easy job to do. Cigar makers. Later, they had factories. They went to the factories to work. But most of them, they had stores in the windows. Men used to sit and make cigars in the windows. And the boys came from the whole country, and it was easy to make a cigar. And they made cigars, they went to the tailor shops to work, they went to work in printing shops, and so on. Now, I think it's much easier for them. First of all, they have so much things that we never had it. Insurance. We start out without insurance. We start out without welfare. We start out without Social Security. We start out with the shops were not so clean like now. Now it's different entirely now. And Jews don't come in anymore from Europe, so there is no Jews, and maybe in another few years there won't be now not even one Jewish tailor in another few years. And they get a scholarship, children are getting a scholarship now, so a lot of people are going in the tailoring industry now, because there's a lot of good fringes. There's a lot of young women are working in the shops now. And when she's going to have a baby, the union will pay her for so much and so much to stay home until she has the baby, the last few months. And then when she has the baby a few months, and then she goes back to work, and we have nurseries, that the children could go to the nurseries. You see, so it's much easier, and they get a scholarship, and the children, those that have all the children get scholarship. I didn't have a pair of shoes to put on when I sent my children to school. I didn't have no scholarship for my children. So I think it's much easier now, and we have a clinic now, that this is a great help to our workers, a great help.
What about, not specifically in the union, but in the industry generally, is there a different group of people that are...
A different group of people. We have the majority of people on our... We have a lot of groups. We have Italian, there are a lot of Italian people are coming in here, because the Italian people bring their... families and so on. We have Polish people coming in. We have in the factories, but I noticed it the last time when they had that settlement, that was about a year ago, from the fire strike, the settlement, they called in our the retirees too, on the lot where the cars are, to listen. It was interesting for us too, that we got $5 a raise. They fought for us because we claimed that we were the original ones. We built the union. So they gave us $5 a raise. Well, it's better than nothing. But I noticed the people are Mexicans. People are different people now. Mexicans, Puerto Ricans, Japanese, and Polish. Not too many Polish. And Italian. In colors. And Jews, I maybe saw, I don't know, maybe I saw a handful of Jews that I knew. The Jews are disappearing from that trade because we don't put our children back to the trade. See, we want our children to be, to have an easier life than to work in the shop. Polish people brought in their children in the shops. Agnes is a result from the people in the, from the, I don't know whether the family were, did she say anything, the family were in the tailoring?
I think so.
Yeah. Other girls, their mothers were in the trade, they brought it. I worked with a girl, the mother was an American-born woman. And she hardly graduated grammar school. I worked in Barnes, I worked on Lincoln Street. And she had a daughter that graduated high school. And she brought her in the tailor shop. So I said to her, what was her name? I can't remember her name. I said, how come you brought in your daughter to the shop to work? She said, because in the offices they don't pay as much as in the tailor shop. We were making $25 a week that time in the tailor shop. And the office didn't pay $25 even in the shop. You ought to be dressed up to date, and in the tailor shop, she used to put on an apron in the air when she would come into work. And so our Italian people brought in their children. Mother and father worked, and then the children worked. Some of them didn't even make grammar school. And they worked in the shops. The whole family worked in the shops. You didn't see Jewish people, whole families working the shop. I don't know to say that they were smarter. I don't know whether they were smarter than the others, but evidently they didn't want their children to be in the shops. I know myself. I didn't think of even to bring my children in the shop. I wanted to work day and night, and I did. Make my children something different.
Lottie, what kinds of changes, what differences do you see in, just like in the status of women now and when you first started in the industry?
Well, the women, those that work in the shops, don't even know how to talk English, a lot of them, now. With the exception of those colored people that were born here, they talk English. We have a Spanish people that they don't even talk good English. They don't have English even. They don't understand. I see go out from Harsh Hefner's Japanese women and Puerto Rico and other women, I don't know the languages that they talk. They talk on the bus. Foreign languages they talk on the bus. And those are the people that go now from our chicken and ours. They're nice people. They look to be very nice. But they don't know yet even how to talk. But they don't have to talk as long as they produce, as long as they work in the shops and they make. See? And they have to thank us what we accomplished. We did this for them now with the scholarship. I didn't get no scholarship for my children. All these here people, they didn't get any. Sherman got the scholarship for his son.
Bobby, if you had all of this to do again, would there be anything you'd change?
Whether I would do any changes? Well, I'll tell you, if I would be as smart as when I came here from the old country, as I acquired my education and my knowledge, yes, I would do a different way. I always wanted to do other things. Although I made a living and I made everything from the tailoring, but I always wanted to do a lot of things. I always wanted to do a lot of things. That was my aim, to do a lot of things. As I said before, my kids went to school, I wanted them to school together. To Jewish school, I wanted them together. They went to grammar school, I wanted them. They went to high school, I wanted them. They played music, I played music. I did everything that they do. I wanted them to see that they haven't got an ignorant mother. I wanted they should see that their mother is just like they are. And a lot of times my children tell them, if not for you, I wouldn't be a teacher. If not for you, I wouldn't be there. I wouldn't be this. I would be different if not for you. You wanted me to be what I am.
How does that make you feel?
Makes me feel good. When my daughter was playing piano, at that time I couldn't afford to give her lessons, but she wanted to play. I wanted her to know everything too. I gave her dancing. She didn't dance very good, but I gave her piano. She got a pin from a college of music, and she was, even in school, she played the piano for the children. She played the piano all the time in school. And she's a bright girl too. She's a very bright girl. And I inspired her even with her children to send to school. You know, when Jerry, the one that is a doctor now, when he was finishing the high school, I said, Jerry, darling, what are you going to study in college? What do you want to be when you grow up? He said, I don't know. Maybe I'll be an accountant. Everybody was an accountant. A lot of accountants in the country. Accountant. I said, that's all you want to do is being an accountant? There's so many of them. I said, you know what, honey? We need a dentist in the family. I said to him, I have a dentist in the family. One is in Boston and one is in Highland Park. But we need a dentist here in Chicago. He didn't say anything. And when he went into college, he was going to be a dentist. But with dentistry, you have to work with clay. And his hand didn't work within clay. Mm. So his teacher said to him, you know, Jerry, you switch to something else. Your hand doesn't go much in clay. So he went, took off pre-med. He wanted to be an orthodontist. And when his mother said, why did you pick up dentistry? He said, honey said that we need a dentist in the family. Honest to God. That's what he said. Honey said we need a dentist in the family. But his hand didn't go good in clay. So he switched to pre-med. I mean, he's already in the second year now and doing a residential work. And he's going to be internist, stomach and heart. That's what he wants to be. And that's the one that's going to have his birthday Thursday.
Lottie, how would you describe yourself when you came to this country, when you started working in the industry?
Well, I'll tell you, I couldn't adapt myself to, in the early years, in the beginnings, to the trade, to the people, because from home, as I told you before, my father and my family, my mother, they came from a better standard of people, more educated people. And this in Europe, so my father was a writer, he was a teacher, he was a court, a big man, going to the people. And the whole city looked up to him. Whatever they needed, they came to my father for poetry they needed for something, they came to my father. He was a poet. He used to write poetry a lot. They came to him all the time. And in Europe is, you know, it's a high, on a high level. Here in this country, we all alike. I learned to be just as good as anybody else. I learned to be. I hope to be, because I work with people and I want to adjust myself. So I learned to be just as anybody else. That big name was gone from me. As I said before, my parents never knew that I worked in a tailor shop, that I married a tailor.
So you were, in a way, you were used to being in kind of a prestigious family and used to having certain things, and it was hard for you to
adapt myself, uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. But when I found a nice girl, I was friends with her. I found a nice Italian girl that I told you I used to come to their house. I used to be friends with her, and she had a nice family. The mother was a very nice woman, and she had a school teacher, a sister, and one sister worked in an office. Although her father was a street cleaner, but he was a nice gentleman, a very nice man. A street cleaner wasn't like it's a profession too. It was a profession too. See? Everything was a profession.
You were mentioning a few times that in a lot of ways you felt you were naive when you were really young.
Yes,
how
I was.
How do you think you conquered that, or how do you think that changed?
Because years ago, mothers couldn't tell that much children, didn't tell the children so much as mothers do now. I heard a program on whose program was it? I think it was on the David Susskind program, if I'm not mistaken. He's on Saturday night on Channel 11. And there was, what group was that? That was homosexual. I think it was from a homosexual group was on this. I think so. I'm not sure. And a woman there, she said that she was 17 years old, that she went to college, and her mother prepared her with diaphragms. And I thought it was awful. I never heard that a thing like that in my life. When I was when I got married, my husband bought me a book, what every girl should know before she's getting married. You see, and my mother, years ago, mothers didn't, not that they were stupid or ignorant, they didn't talk like this freely to children, to tell them things like they do now. When a girl goes to school, mothers buy them pills, gives them pills along, or fits them in the diaphragms. And years ago, they didn't do that. Is whatever the girls, they learn themselves. Now, I am a self-made person. because my mother didn't prepare me for anything. My father taught me things. He was a clever man. He was an educated man. He taught me Hebrew. He taught me German, Russian, Polish, and I was in a nice company all the time. But it wasn't a man's duty to explain to their daughters what to do and so on. And I doubt whether he even taught my brother. I had a brother, a young fella, and I doubt whether he ever said anything to him prepared. But now it's different. The mothers in psychology, my daughter was in a psychology class, and the professor lectured about sex. And I don't want to say that on the tape, I don't want to say.
Lottie, do you have any goals now?
What?
Do you have any goals now?
What
do you think you want?
I should only be well. This is my only goal now. I've lived to see my children being nice. My daughter's raised a nice family. My son is not so, either worse. And the children are more with the mother than with the father. And he didn't marry the young girl. She's 22 years old now. But please don't write about it.
No, I won't.
And he just became a father. And he adopted her two children too. So, you know, this hurts me awful lot.
Mm-hmm.
This hurts me awful lot. But I have a lot of joy for my daughter's children. Although his children, my son's children, they call me every week, several times a week. One grandson, a boy, is married in Denver. Sometimes he calls me twice a week. How are you, Grandma? I said, honey, don't call me twice. It costs a lot of money. He said, well, I only have two grandmas. I love you, Grandma. And my sons. And the other one has what do you call it, that sickness? You know that they pass out. I can't think of it. And he comes for dinner. And I am good with his mother. With my son's ex-wife, I'm good. The count of the children, I want to be good. And I liked her. She was a nice girl. I liked her very much. And if I invited Bert for dinner, he said, could I bring mother with me? I said, sure. And she comes with him. And they have dinner in my house. But I don't tell nothing my son. And I don't tell her anything that I see him or I hear from him. And that hurts me awful lot. But otherwise, I have pleasure from the children. I love my children, all of them. I love all my children. They're nice kids, all of them.
Do you find you have enough to do now, or was it a real adjustment for you once you quit working?
Well, I'll tell you, when I quit working, I didn't want to quit working because, as I said, I had a nice job, and it didn't fall for me hard to do all the work. Mm-hmm. But when I married Morris, he wanted me. He said he was 20. He was all his life by himself. He lived in hotels and he ate in hotels. And he wants to have a wife with him. And I went with him. I traveled with him and I went with him all over. And I devoted all my time in the retiree center. And Finley and Joyce said, Morris, I leave to you the retiree center and you do whatever you want. You're the father of it. And you get the people as much as you can. And we used to go in the office. He had a little office there in the 144. They didn't come until late in the afternoon, so we devoted all our time in 144. In the morning, we used to call on people, and they told us to call on people and to write to people. And in fact, Morris had a part-time secretary, and she used to help out, write letters for Morris. And there wasn't a dull moment. they write into. We were always busy getting letters and writing letters and calling people, and then we got the workshops in the union, and we ought to have people to work with the teachers, and we kept on calling everybody, and I participated in all over with them. Although I was busy, but I participated. I used to run up and down and here and there and always work with them together. They should see that I am with them too, that I don't run away from them. I was always busy. So I never had a dull moment, and I didn't participate in any other organization. Only the Amalgamated was with. There was everything to us, to both of us. And when Morris died, I found that I was alone, and I couldn't even go to the union many times, because here I saw Morris was sitting here, Morris was playing cards, and Morris was talking, and everybody asked me. A lot of people didn't know that he was there. They used to come in and say, "How's Mr. Spitzer?" And I used to cry. So it was very hard for me till I adjusted myself. And then I thought, well, I have to do something else too. So I got involved in another organization in which I am on a board, and I talk to people, I collect money for different organizations, and I go to meetings, and now I got into the JCC, and I'm there to active in the JCC,
and
the Pioneer Women, I'm active, I'm on the board. And the Amalgamated. So I have three organizations that I, I haven't got the strength now. I don't feel too good. The doctor said to me, I have to curb my time, not to go every day out. There's parties every day. I have a party Wednesday by us, Tuesday by us, and Wednesday in the JCC, and Thursday in the Old People's Home. I belong to Old People's Home too. Hanukkah parties, and then there's a Christmas party, and I have all over Christmas party. In JCC we celebrate Christmas parties too, because it's an organization. If Gentile people come in, we don't tell them to go out. We have them there too. In fact, we have a couple of Gentile people there. They like over our organization. And we have parties, but I can't make those older parties everything. And I feel that I'm more indebted today. I'm out of make it today any other place, because this was my, from the beginning on, that I devoted so much time. This is mine. I come in, I find Morris's picture, I say hello to him, I say goodbye to him, I sit across the his picture and look at him. And I feel that this is my place.